Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to Thursday's Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany.
And I am Abubakar Jallo with what's trending on social media and on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Also on today's show, the International Criminal Court Members States meeting winds up in The Hague. Nigeria's foreign minister tells fellow African states, don't leave.
We believe that no country should pull out. Rather, if there are issues that countries have with the ICC, we should try and address it from within.
And the European Parliament votes against EU membership talks with Turkey.
There is a broad majority to say you have to freeze the accession talks for the moment.
And some reactions to report on South Africa's former public protector, Tuli Madonsela, who was awarded Germany's prestigious Africa Prize last night in Berlin.
But first, we find out what's been happening across the globe.
I'm Jesse Wingard with DW News. European Parliament lawmakers have voted to halt EU membership talks with Turkey. The non-binding motion urges the European Commission and member states to freeze ongoing negotiations. The move comes in response to what lawmakers described as Ankara's disproportionate response to an attempted coup in July. Since then, tens of thousands of people, including teachers, journalists and opposition party members, have been arrested or fired. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has called the move worthless. Member countries have signalled they will review their decision when the political situation eases in Turkey. European Parliament President Martin Schulz says he is quitting the top job to return to German politics. Schulz says he intends to run in his home state of North Rhine-Westphalia in the Bundestag, Germany's lower house of parliament.
It was not an easy decision, as it is an honour to be president of the European Parliament, and I am very thankful for the opportunity. Germany, in particular, as the biggest member state of the European Union, bears a special responsibility, which until now I have tried to fulfill as a German member of the European Parliament, and in the future I will strive to fulfill from Berlin.
The move fuels speculation that Schulz could become the Social Democrats' candidate to run against Chancellor Angela Merkel in Germany's general election next year. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. The Colombian government says it will sign a new peace agreement with leftist FARC rebels on Thursday. The announcement comes after a previous deal was rejected in a referendum last month. The revised agreement will be submitted to Colombia's parliament for approval. The deal aims to end more than 50 years of armed conflict. The opposition movement criticised the new treaty, saying it did not go far enough to address the failings of the first deal. Amnesty International has accused Nigeria's security forces of killing at least 150 pro-Biafra protesters. The organisation said in a report that the peaceful advocates were shot upon with live ammunition between August 2015 and this year. Director of Amnesty International Nigeria, Makmi Kamara, said Amnesty is concerned about the increase in the militarisation of policing across the country.
We think it is creating a lot of scope for the Nigerian army to be killing, what we'll consider killing at will, of innocent people, of people who hold dissent in voice. And we are also particularly concerned that out of the 36 states in Nigeria, the military is currently deployed in 30 of those states. The current level of the use of military as the first point of call to address peaceful processions, peaceful gatherings and demonstration is something that the Nigerian government has to stop.
The report is the latest in a string of accusations levelled at the army by Amnesty. The military and police have dismissed the allegations. To Syria, where armed opposition in rebel-held eastern Aleppo have agreed to a plan to allow aid deliveries and medical evacuations. Senior United Nations humanitarian official Jan Egeland said the UN was still waiting on the Syrian government to give approval. Egeland added that aid convoys were waiting in western Aleppo and Turkey to bring supplies to civilians.
To Today is the last day of the annual meeting in The Hague of the member states of the International Criminal Court, the ICC. The meeting is taking place shortly after three African countries, Gambia, South Africa and Burundi, announced that they would be withdrawing from the court, citing bias against Africa. But the court membership totals more than 120 states, more than 30 of which are African. And despite the well-publicised defections from the court, a number of African countries still support it. They include Nigeria, from where Ubale Musa reports.
For years, African countries have claimed that the court is biased. 9 of 10 cases tried in the court are from Africa. This put the continent on the global spotlight on war crimes and genocide. But Nigeria's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Geoffrey Onyema, is of a different view.
We believe that no country should pull out. Rather, if there are issues that countries have with the ICC, we should try and address it from within. The most important thing is what the ICC strives to do. And it is to make hold leaders accountable and protect Africans, you know, from crimes against humanity, genocidal crimes, and so forth. And I think that is still what we have to uphold. You know, there is security of Africans.
Some Nigerians, however, differ from the position of the authority in the country. Peter Nelegu believes that ICC can no longer guarantee the justice it was designed to serve.
If you look around the world, we have had other leaders in other countries, you know, who would have been brought before this court, who would have been indicted, but that has not been the case. You know, world over, there has been concerns about these international bodies, you know, as more or less as if they are partial, you know, not being objective.
Beyond the issues of objectivity and impartiality, to send the order, it's high time Nigeria joins the exit wagon before being caught unaware.
Yes, if you ask me, Nigeria should join the bandwagon immediately to pull out, because certainly someday we will begin to feel to feel the heat. Certainly one day to happen. So Nigeria cannot stand on one side, being a giant of Africa, being the leader that calls itself.
Though there are few petitions against the government and individuals within the country and the ICC, Nigeria is still enjoying its ability to try all human rights abuses within its soil, thus not looking at the possibility of leading some of its leaders to Hague.
Ubala Musa reporting. The European Parliament has voted in favour of halting talks on Turkey's bid to join the European Union. The vote, which is non-binding, comes amid concerns in Europe over Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's ongoing political and military crackdown following a failed coup in July. Our Europe editor, Helen Sini, reports.
The motion to suspend Turkey's membership talks with the EU was approved by a solid majority of lawmakers in the European Parliament. The vote won't have any legal implications, as most EU states want to keep the talks on track. However, it's yet another blow to relations with Ankara, which have soured since July's failed military coup. Since then, European leaders have repeatedly voiced their concern over Turkey's crackdown on rights and democracy. Under emergency laws, more than 40,000 people have been jailed and 100,000 dismissed from public sector jobs. The European Parliament said the freeze on membership talks should last until Ankara's disproportionate measures under the state of emergency are lifted. Guy Verhofstadt is the leader of the Parliament's Liberal ALDE group.
Instead of continuing the illusion of accession talks with a regime that becomes more and more authoritarian, I think that we are losing credibility to do so. And there is, in my opinion, in this House, a broad, broad majority to say you have to freeze the accession talks for the moment.
The vote in favour of suspending membership talks was widely expected. On Wednesday, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan lashed out at what he called a lack of concrete support from the EU. He said the vote had no value at all and would not interrupt his country's struggle for stability. Some European politicians have also criticised the suspension, arguing that it may push Ankara to adopt an even harsher stance on human rights issues. Earlier this week, Carl Bildt, a former Swedish prime minister, tweeted that it would be a strategic stupidity of the first order for the EU to unilaterally abandon its relationship with Turkey. Neither side expects Turkey to be in a position to join the EU for many years to come. But back in March, relations between Brussels and Ankara appeared to be improving. The EU agreed to accelerate membership talks as part of a deal which would see migrants and refugees arriving in Europe deported back to Turkey. Brussels also agreed to give Turks visa-free travel once Ankara carried out key reforms. But ties have unravelled in the wake of July's failed coup. Ankara itself has been angered by the lack of progress and has suggested it may decide to pull out of membership talks by the end of the year. EU leaders are due to discuss Turkey again at a summit in Brussels in mid-December.
Helen Sini reporting. Germany's Africa Prize is awarded every year, mostly to outstanding public figures from Africa who've made a major contribution to the promotion of democracy, peace and human rights. Yesterday evening, the prize was awarded to South Africa's former public protector, Thuli Madonsela. From Berlin, Daniel Peltz reports.
The ceremony close to Berlin's most famous landmark, the Brandenburg Gate, was attended by more than 300 people. They included members of parliament, diplomats, business people, as well as civil society representatives. The guest of honor was Norbert Lammert, speaker of Germany's lower house of parliament, the Bundestag. He praised Madonsela as a remarkable example of courage.
We know from our own German history that democracy is no guarantee against corruption and abuse of office. Therefore, we need institutions and civil society that watch and control to make sure democracy is working. Mrs. Madonsela is a remarkable example of that, and there are few others like her.
Thuli Madonsela, on the other hand, remained modest. She said the award was an example that showed that many people in Germany cared about Africa and about her work.
For my team in particular, the award means the people of Germany and particularly the German Africa Foundation recognizes our humble efforts and recognizes the importance of the Power Protector as a partner for good governance and as a catalyst for change when governance fails.
The German Africa Foundation started to award the German Africa Prize in 1993. Past recipients include the Secretary General of the West African Economic Union, ECOWAS, Mohamed Chambers. The former head of Sierra Leone's Electoral Commission, Christina Thorpe, received the prize in 2009.
Daniel Peltz reporting from Berlin.
And Mark, there are so many responses and praises for Thuli Madonsela on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
I hope you didn't only select just the positive ones.
This is actually true. Apart from editing for grammar and language, I haven't actually altered any of the responses.
Okay, let's hear them, shall we?
Okay, let's begin with Shirley Davidson, who said, "Thuli, South Africa loves you and so do I." And Priscilla Whiteman added by saying she is a woman with integrity, amazing character. Nikki Johnson wrote she is a special lady, a shining example to everybody about honesty and integrity. And the response went on and on, and further then included calls for her to run for the office of the president.
And presumably she's noticed these calls, hasn't she?
Definitely she has. And it's currently a major topic on several Twitter handles calling for Thuli Madonsela to run for the office of the President of South Africa.
Now, Abu, you were at the award ceremony last night. First of all, how did it go? And secondly, how did you respond to those calls about running for the country's top job?
It was actually quite amazing. I was so really amazed by her performance and the things she said about she's a really remarkable woman. I was quite touched by how humble she was, how she kept referring to the fact that the Office of the Public Protector or the Ombudsman, as people call it in other countries, that it's not just a job for one person. She kept mentioning the entire team of investigators. She also struck me as someone who is very intelligent. She knows her job and she did it really, really well. And yes, she did address the subject of whether she would run for office. She said no, she harbors no political ambition and she is going to return back to the academic world. Now, a few last responses on that subject. Lynette February said she is indeed the lady to run for our country. And Alicia Concanon wrote, an amazing woman, I will definitely vote for her.
Abu, very many thanks. You're listening to Africa Link, coming to you from Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany. Coming up on Africa Link, we meet Greek Afro-rapper Negros Timorira, who's trying to break down racial barriers.
You know, because I'm an African and I'm speaking Greek, they see something, you know, something crazy new and something respectful.
That story later in the program. 22 years after the end of apartheid, South Africa is still grappling with land reform. All parties seem to be willing to redistribute land from white to black people, and yet progress is slow. So slow that many are getting impatient. Malte Rover Kalman reports.
Land ownership is a contentious issue in South Africa. With the end of apartheid in 1994, the ANC party promised to correct the wrongs of the past by shifting land from white farmers back to the black population, who had lost most fertile land under colonial rule. But only little progress has been made. Recently, a black community of around 40 families staged a protest on farmland north of Durban in Upper Inanda. 23-year-old Lisa Mbele is one of the protesters, speaking for a family and other families in the area.
My father has been staying here for so long. You must be treated equally. Now that I'm standing here, I must have the paper that's allowing me to do everything that I want to do in the property that I'm in. Because you can't do anything if you can't have that paper.
Initially, the government targeted to redistribute one-third of the land by 1999. But to date, they are far from reaching this target. Professor Nick Vink, chairman of the Agricultural Economics Department at Stellenbosch University, is not surprised.
We haven't given it enough time. We really do need to think carefully about how long these things take. Of course, because it's an emotional issue, everybody wants to get it settled. But I'm afraid that's not realistic. It's something that's going to be with the country, I would think, for the next two to three generations.
But people are getting impatient. The Economic Freedom Fighters, a radical left-wing party, is tapping into the frustration. Here's Julius Malema, the party's head.
When we live here, you see any beautiful piece of land, you like it, occupy it, it belongs to you, it is your land, it is the land of your forefathers, it is a land that was taken from us by white people by force through genocide.
It's statements like these that are sparking fears of violent land grabs, like they happened in neighboring Zimbabwe. Brett Williams is a white farmer in Upper Inanda. He witnessed the recent protests.
It was aggression, burning of tires, blocking of roads. I don't feel that there's a need for this. Aggression is not anything anybody wants. We just hope that we can resolve this in a peaceful manner and go down the correct channels.
The South African Parliament passed a bill back in May to speed up land reform. President Zuma still needs to sign it, but nobody's sure he actually will, because commercially, land reform so far isn't working. Annelies Crosby is part of the Farmers Union Agri-SA, which generally supports land reform, but she warns that the country's stability is at stake.
Whoever is farming the land should use it productively and sustainably. There's another interesting exercise that we went through last year, and what that points to is that unless we get this right, you know, we're likely to have unrest, food insecurity, basically chaos.
To get it right, that's what everybody wants. To try and put right the injustices that happened in the past and finally move forward as one nation. Land reform was supposed to become a symbol of that. But instead, it seems to have become a symbol of how deep racial divisions are still running in the country. 22 years after the end of apartheid, many South Africans, like Lisa Mbele, are still waiting for the justice they were promised.
Malte Rowe-Kalman reporting. U-Zone. And U-Zone this week takes us to Greece. The country is struggling with an economic crisis. There was a public sector workers' strike on Thursday, and also trying to cope with the arrival of migrants from Africa. Now, this is the country in which Afro-Greek rapper Negros Timorira is trying to overcome ethnic barriers with his music. From Athens, Heidi Fuller Love reports.
I've been managing an artist called Negros Timorira, and the way I found him was I was out for the radio station. I was going to cover this event that was called Underground Jam, and that was organized by some people that were sort of active in trying to push the kids who were born in Greece.
Greek rapper Negros Tou Moria was discovered by Kostas Nikiforakis, presenter on local radio Athena 9.84 and creator of 307 Squad, an Athens-based collective connecting musicians from different ethnic backgrounds who hope to change the face of the music scene in Greece.
The labels here in Greece are not enough. That's why Black Athena started something new, hoping that this label is going to upgrade the whole music industry in Greece, because they don't care.
The frustration of Lefteris, one of the members of 307 Squad, is reflected by many young people in Greece today, for whom music, like so many other aspects of Greek life, are slow to change. One other aspect that's slow to change, and one that Squad member and rapper Negros has suffered from, is the country's ambient racism.
There's a whole discrimination when you're black. Right now you can see like new generation. You can see white and blacks chilling together, Greeks, immigrants, you know. You can see when I used to play football, I was the only black guy in the whole team.
As a son of Ghanaian parents, the 22-year-old rapper was born in Athens suburbs, baptized Greek Orthodox, went to school in Greece and speaks Greek, but still feels like an outsider.
The system, it's racist, my opinion, because there's a law that they say you got to be Greek by blood. Sometimes I feel Greek, sometimes I feel like a foreigner.
Using slang from Greek rebetika, Negros has launched his own assault on Greek society. Rebetiko, which sprung out of the hashish dens of Piraeus at the beginning of the 20th century, has been Greece's protest music through different periods, ranging from World War II to the country's military dictatorship from 1967 to 1974. Via the themes of his debut album Akougontas ke Methenontas, Listen and Learn, and his work on the label's latest title, Tribes of Athens, Negros says he wants his music to inspire other immigrants in Greece to stand up for their rights and to fight for what they believe in. Intertwining the language of a bygone era with references to life in Athens today, Negros Tou Moria is rapidly becoming one of the most talked about rappers on the current Greek music scene.
For the hip-hop scene, people that are not racist have much love. You know, they have double love, twice as love. You know, because I'm an African and I'm speaking Greek, they see something, you know, something crazy new and something respectful. That I like the history, that I like talking, writing in Greek, you know, speaking in Greek.
And that report was compiled by Heidi Fuller Love.
Speaking out.
Earlier this week, the United Nations Human Rights Council announced the appointment of three commissioners to investigate human rights abuses in Burundi. The three-member commission has been mandated to identify the alleged perpetrators of violations and abuses in the country since April 2015. But at a press conference in Bujumbura today, the Burundian Human Rights Minister said the government would not be cooperating with the three investigators. From Bujumbura, Apollinaire Niyora reports.
Burundi's Solidarity and Human Rights Minister Martin Ivyabandi said the three investigators are not welcome because the government was not involved in appointing the commission.
As the government of Burundi, we are not involved anymore in the investigation to be made by this commission.
Ivyabandi defied the UN Human Rights Council report of September, saying that the allegations therein were wrong. The newly appointed investigators are to confirm it.
That is a neocolonialism issue. And as Africans, we have to pay most attention if we do like to promote the human rights. There are some international organizations, their goal is to destabilize some governments of Africa.
A civil society organization close to the Burundian government has claimed that the investigators would make the already bad situation even worse. Here is François-Xavier Ndaruzaniye, chairman of Izere Niwihebure Human Rights League.
La Ligue Zenuwebure demande au gouvernement du Burundi à l'Assemblée
nationale. Désiré Ntuwihebure requests the Burundian government and the parliament to consider the issue because without hesitations, those investigators' only objective is to plunge Burundi into chaos, as similar investigators did it in Iraq or Libya. Because superpowers ground on those false reports to invade targeted countries.
Relations between Burundi and the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights in Burundi are tense since the publication in September of the report by three UN experts on violations of human rights in the country. The experts documented 564 executions committed by the government and affiliated groups. The report also confirmed targeted assassinations, arbitrary detention, torture, and sexual violence. After the publication of the report, the Burundian government suspended all cooperation and collaboration with the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights until further notice. As a result, it declared the three UN independent experts who wrote the report persona non grata on its territory. They were accused of serious breaches and prejudices caused on Burundi and its people.
Apollinaire Niyiora reporting. So if the Burundian government is not going to cooperate with the three new commissioners from the UN Human Rights Council, they are presumably going to find it very difficult to do their job. I put that point to Richard Schaber, a programme coordinator with Germany's Konrad Adenauer Foundation in Tanzania.
They will find it difficult because you need to work with the government in order to get whatever you need. Even just getting into the country, you need the government to facilitate that. And once you're in the country, you will need a base, you will need information, you need to move to places. So the government has to be convinced that they want to work with you for you to be able to work. It's said that the government does not want to work with the UN, but the UN should have checked properly before arriving, because there must have been some communication between the government of Burundi, the one which is in power now, and the UN.
Hundreds of people have been killed since President Pierre Nkurunziza decided to run for a controversial third term. A quarter of a million people have fled the country. Thousands have been arrested and possibly subjected to rights violations. What options now does the UN Human Rights Council have?
To put it in a very blunt form, the train has already left the station. Nkurunziza is the president, whether legally, illegally, or whether we say he's a legitimate president or not. But at the moment, he's holding the reins. He's got the power, he's got the forces. One way of moving forward is to talk to him and say, okay, how do we come to terms that you feel comfortable? And what other compromises can you accept, which may not be threatening to you, but at least makes the country governable, makes the people live peacefully. I'm aware what I'm saying is not what the Burundians want to hear, but at the point we are now, the reality is there and we have to move with it.
Richard Schaber from Germany's Konrad Adenauer Foundation. Abu Bakar.
And for what's trending on Twitter, we look at hashtag Baking Bindinga in Nigeria. Believe it or not, this is very funny hashtag. This very, very funny hashtag is making so many people in Nigeria crack up. It's the hashtag itself is the name of a song by a popular singer called Ake Fly, who created it to promote his new album. But as you know, in Nigeria, funny things don't go unnoticed. Bindinga in Hausa means rifle or gun, and saying baking guns does make for a lot of jokes. And as this user put it, what is it about patient Jonathan's speech? That's the wife of Nigeria's former president, Goodluck Jonathan. The user is trying to poke jokes at the former first lady about a certain speech she made. This other user say, we have Bindinga the entire country, basically saying that the country is really messed up. The hashtag Raila Bill is also trending in Kenya, and here as well, users are talking about a proposal by the opposition leader Raila Odinga on how to fight corruption. Jane Mwai wrote, by the way, I totally support the Raila Bill. Kamba Pundit said, our dodgy legislatures are waiting for that bill in parliament to rip it to groove. The bill is illogical to the Jubilee government.
And there we end this edition of Africa Link. From me, Mark Caldwell.
And from me, Abubakar Jallo. Bye now.